అమాని త్వమదం విత్వం అహింసా క్షాంతిరార్జవం ఆచార్యోపాసనం శౌచం స్థైర్యమాత్మ వినిగ్రహః ఇంద్రియార్థేషు వైరాగ్యం అనహంకారమేవ చ జన్మ మృత్యు జరా. హ్యూమిలిటీ, ప్రైడ్లెస్నెస్, నాన్ వైలెన్స్, టాలరెన్స్, సింప్లిసిటీ, అప్రోచింగ్ అ బోనఫైడ్ స్పిరిచువల్ మాస్టర్, క్లెన్లీనెస్, స్టెడీనెస్, సెల్ఫ్ కంట్రోల్, రెనన్సియేషన్ ఆఫ్ ద ఆబ్జెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ సెన్స్ గ్రాటిఫికేషన్, యాబ్సెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ఫాల్స్ ఈగో, ద పర్సెప్షన్ ఆఫ్ ద ఈవిల్ ఆఫ్ బర్త్, డెత్, ఓల్డ్ ఏజ్ అండ్ డిజీజ్, డిటాచ్మెంట్, ఫ్రీడమ్ ఫ్రమ్ ఎంటాంగిల్మెంట్ విత్ చిల్డ్రన్, వైఫ్, హోమ్ అండ్ ద రెస్ట్, ఈవెన్ మైండెడ్నెస్ అమిడ్ ప్లసెంట్ అండ్ అన్ప్లసెంట్ ఈవెంట్స్, కాన్స్టెంట్ అండ్ అనలాయిడ్ డివోషన్ టు మీ, ఆస్పైరింగ్ టు లివ్ ఇన్ అ సాలిటరీ ప్లేస్, డిటాచ్మెంట్ ఫ్రమ్ ద జనరల్ మాస్ ఆఫ్ పీపుల్, అక్సెప్టింగ్ ద ఇంపార్టెన్స్ ఆఫ్ సెల్ఫ్ రియలైజేషన్ అండ్ ఫిలాసాఫికల్ సెర్చ్ ఫర్ ద అబ్సల్యూట్ ట్రూత్, ఆల్ దీస్ ఐ డిక్లేర్ టు బి నాలెడ్జ్ అండ్ బిసైడ్స్ దిస్ వాట్ ఎవర్ దర్ మే బి ఇస్ ఇగ్నరెన్స్. సో వి విల్ రీడ్ నిత్యం చ సమచిత్తత్వం ఇష్టా నిష్టోపపత్తిషు. We will see that in the next one. Happiness and distress are concomitant factors of material life. One should learn to tolerate, as advised in Bhagavad Gita. One can never restrict the coming and going of happiness and distress. So one should be detached from the materialistic way of life and be automatically equipoised in both cases. Generally, when we get something desirable, we are very happy. And when we get something undesirable, we are distressed. But if you are actually in the spiritual position, these things will not agitate us. To reach that stage, we have to practice unbreakable devotional service. Devotional service to Krishna without deviation means engaging oneself in the nine processes of devotional service. Chanting, hearing, worshipping, offering respect, etc. As we said in the last verse of the ninth chapter. That process should be followed. Yeah. So Prabhupada explains both here about how one should be equipoised in happiness and distress. Ishta anishta means that which you like and that which you don't like. Ishta anishta. Nityam cha samachittatvam. Samachitta means equipoised. Ishtanishtopapattishu. The sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita also, there are a couple of verses there which explains how a yogi in the yoga ruda stage, which is a mature stage, yoga rurukshu is a beginner, yoga ruda is a perfected yogi. In that stage one can see no difference between pebbles and gold. Samaloshtrashma kanchanaha, it is that. He sees just like stone and gold, he doesn't see any difference. Which means he doesn't become attached to the gold and he doesn't feel the stone to be useless. And then further it is said that when one becomes even, when one comes to that stage, not only with things, even with people, Suhran mitra yudasina madhyastha dvesha bandhushu sadhusha picha papesha samabuddhir vishishyate. It is said, he considers his well-wishers, friends, relatives, Suran Mitra Ari, enemies, Udasin, those who are indifferent, neutral, many other categories of people he says, Madhyastha, Dvesha, Bandushu, Sadhusha, Pishapa, even those who are sadhus. He sees everyone equally, that means he sees only the soul and their bodies. So, we generally feel fear when we see the enemies. We feel happiness when we see our relatives and friends. And we, when we see our, when we see somebody better than us, we feel envious of them. And when we see neutral people, we also remain neutral towards them. And when we see some gentlemanly, nice people, we appreciate them. So our behavior is totally different towards different people. You can see that. Because you see the behavior of different people and react and respond differently. But a person on a perfected stage can see the soul. It says there in the 6th chapter. Here he is talking about something very similar. Concept is being spoken here. Ishta anishta, likes and dislikes. Everyone in this world has likes and dislikes. I like this, I don't like this. This arises from the mind. The mind is like a very great lake or a reservoir in which the ripples of thoughts and thought waves are always rising. And the Annamaya stage, the early stage, is such a stage when the living entities just try to sniff and smell and find out what is all around them. Like you see the animals, for example, what is eatable, small baby or animals. It's not that only animals are in Annamaya stage, even grown-up people can be in Annamaya stage. Annamaya stage is a stage when one does not know anything better than enjoying all the things around. So, we consider only in terms of what I like and what I don't like. We hardly worry about others' likes and dislikes. I like, so everyone should like in the way I like. And everyone should only like what I like. And everyone should hate what I hate. So these are common causes of quarrels in the material world. Because we expect others to also respond exactly in the same way as we respond. So, this ishta anishta causes a lot of problems. Because just as the material world brings us many nice things, pleasurable things, it also brings many painful things in our life. Just like on a birthday, all people praise you, they glorify you, they give you birthday cards, they give you gifts, they put garland on you, they sing for you. So it's a very pleasurable experience. And the mind feels very elated. And another occasion we feel just the opposite. The people who appreciate it sometimes may chastise us when we do mistakes. So that is not pleasurable to the mind. Mind becomes averse. So mind wants to experience pleasurable things and keep repeating it again and again. Repeat pleasurable experience again and again. Whatever gives me pleasure, I want to experience it again. And when you can repeat it several times, you call it success. And you want to repeat success again and again. That's what people consider success to be nowadays. Success means if I can again and again always be experiencing happiness always. You will see that there is a constant struggle to push away suffering. Like for example, when there is a great heat in the summer, people try to beat the heat by going to some hill station, isn't it? Like recently I had gone to a place in Kadakwasla. So it was looking very nice, it's very cold. Cold air, it's very nice. So you feel you have surpassed the heat of the summer. So you may feel very happy. So few of us brahmacharis had gone for a couple of days to study. But although we have escaped the heat, it will come in some other way. Whatever suffering we were supposed to endure, the suffering is now reserved for us. It will be given at some other time. Because the material world is so created that the quantum of pain and pleasure cannot be escaped. Everyone is allotted a quota and they have to experience it. Only the method in which you experience it will be varying. How you? If you escape the suffering in one way, it will come in another way. So one should be aware that happiness and distress, they both will come just like day and night. Like there is day and there is night. Again there is day, again there is night. Sometimes there is summer, there is winter. So like now the rains have started. So we were cursing the rain today. Oh, heavy rains. We thought how many people are going to be able to come in such heavy rains. When we have got late. So when rains come, we curse the rain. When there is hot summer, we curse the summer. Isn't it? When it is cold, scorching. When very cold winter, we curse the winter. It is too cold in November, December, January. So these seasons will anyway come, whether we like it or not. That example is given by Lord Krishna himself. Shitoshna, Sukha, Dukkada. Similarly, he says, when problems come in your life, learn to face them. One thing is, one has to be sure that material world is a place of problems, and one should be prepared to face them without lamenting for them, mourning about them. Like, you know, as it was, there is a in Bhagavatam there is a very famous verse by Prahlad Maharaj, Yatha Dukkam Ayatnataha. It's a very famous verse. Sukham Maindrakam Daitya Deha Yogena Degina Sarvatra Labhyate Daivat Yatha Dukkam Ayatnataha. He is telling his friends, Prahlad's friends, Prahlad is telling them that all of you are chasing after sense gratification because that gives you some pleasurable experience. But he said, let me tell you that just as the pleasure without your chasing after comes to you automatically in your life. Like for example, we all get our food, we all get our rest, we all get our salary, everything comes. In the same way he says, Yatha Dukkam Ayatnataha. Ayatna means without any endeavor. It will automatically come in your life. Don't endeavor, he says. Just like, for example, did you pray for Dukkha, but it comes in your life. For example, we all sometimes get some diseases, we go to doctor. Recently Gopashama was giving a lecture in Sunday feast. He was telling a nice example, isn't it? Like you don't pray, you know, you give me a headache. Oh God, give me a headache, and then you get a headache. No, headache comes automatically. So nobody prays, you know, please break my leg. Let me have a fracture while riding my scooter. But one gets a fracture. So these things come without our asking. In the same way, pleasure will also come, he says, without your asking. Now somebody may say, will I have to endeavor or I don't have to endeavor? Pleasure will come automatically. Shastra explain, what is destined is only the results of your action, not the action itself. Your actions are not destined, only the results of your actions are destined. Which means whatever actions you have done in the past, further the results will come now. Pleasure and pain is coming now. And now you can make your actions positive to avoid suffering in the future. That's all you can do. But in this life one has to endure the suffering. That's the fundamental truth. That means whatever we have created in the past, the record cannot be changed. They all will come. That is why we all suffer. Even after becoming devotees, we suffer sometimes. Because like a fan, even after you switch off, it keeps on rotating. It keeps coming. So, what is the difference between a devotee and a materialist? A devotee faces trouble, a materialist faces trouble, but there is a difference in perception they have. A devotee perceives the sufferings as arrangement by Krishna to shape his future, to make it a bright future. That's what a devotee thinks. Just like a, you know, sculptor taking a chisel and shaping a murti. So a devotee thinks Krishna is shaping me up. Once Isana Ranasam is giving an example in Bhagavatam class. He said a potato that comes from the market, you know, it's very muddy. First you have to wash it, then you have to have a peeler to peel it, then you cut it into pieces. Then you boil it, then you take out the boiled potatoes and put it in the frying pan, and you put chili powder in it and salt powder in it and fry it with oil. After all these things, the potato becomes offerable to Krishna. He said, similarly, all of us are like potatoes, he said. We should be ready for all these things, he said. Just like the potato is treated in such a process. In the same manner, we may be also undergoing varieties of sufferings in any walk of life. You can see people suffer physical sufferings and mental sufferings, interpersonal sufferings, and all egoistic clashes. So one has to suffer all these things in the world, and that if it is done for the sake of becoming Krishna conscious, then that is the perfection of our life. The goal should be Krishna conscious consciousness. Sometimes people undergo so many courses to have good communication and good interpersonal relationship, you know, how to win your friends and how to win over other people. But with all these courses, if the goal is to enjoy sense gratification, what is the use of those courses? Isn't it? Like we offer stress management course. So once I was talking to one of the senior devotees. I said, are you not making them better donkeys? You help them to relieve them of their stress. And then they become free from stress and they become better donkeys to work more harder for no good purpose. So that is not our purpose for which we offer this course. We we offer the course so that they also get some understanding of what is devotional service, what is God. Ultimately, the goal is to bring them to Krishna. So, no matter how much we counteract these pains in the world, no one can escape them. In Bhagavatam, there is a beautiful verse. It says that the threefold miseries, they cause so much lamentation to the conditioned soul, and that makes the conditioned soul very morose. So that's how the material world is created. So we are not just optimistic materialists who simply want to have a slightly different outlook to life so that they can be happy forever. Many materialistic people have a notion that if you simply take your life light and be optimistic, then you won't face any problem. But even such optimists, at some point of time or other, they collapse. Like you can see Dale Carnegie, who wrote the book How to Influence People and Win Friends. After writing several books on similar topics, he committed suicide without being able to win any friends. So it's not very surprising, because the material techniques will not help. No matter, material techniques may help, but that is like tip of the iceberg solution. That's like you see a big iceberg, you know, 1% in the top exposed, and then the rest 99% inside. So that's like tip of the iceberg solution. That cannot help so much. That's why Prabhupada says here that unless one is experiencing bhakti, one cannot counteract this pleasure and pain. How many of us have experienced that many times we all know the technique? We know the art of not taking sufferings upon us, not owning the problems upon us. How many of us know the techniques of how to be equipoised in pleasure and pain? We learn so many things. But when you are actually put in a situation, what happens? Everything falls apart. We fail miserably, and we get a fail mark we get. Isn't it, in the situations? So, like for example, many times people attend seminars on overcoming depression, overcoming anger. You attend full seminars for several days. And then even after that, again the same old emotions come back. Like you know this famous joke of one who went to a doctor. He said, "Doctor, I have a serious problem. My problem is I get too angry on my wife." The doctor asked, "When do you generally get angry, morning or evening, after you return from the office?" The man became angry on the doctor. "Who are you to ask that?" And the doctor said, "Now I understood. You get angry anywhere, anytime." Similarly, so, in the same way, there are many people in India who think sadhu means you should have a long flowing beard. As well as Bhakti Vikas Swami used to say the joke about sadhus. In India, he said, sadhu means one who has a long flowing white beard, at the end of which there is a hole which speaks all nonsense. You are telling about the sadhus in India who speaks all kinds of bogus things without presenting the truth. So in India, there is a general notion amongst people that one who has a long flowing beard and who always keeps smiling and keeps giving ashirvad, and such a person is a sadhu. And the sadhu, generally according to them, should not be speaking too much, because if you open the mouth, you will come to know what kind of fool is he. Purpose is, a fool is unexposed as long as he is silent, as long as he doesn't open his mouth. But Vaishnava philosophy does not teach such kind of so-called equipoised nature. It doesn't teach. You will see, Vaishnava philosophy teaches true emotions, genuine emotions. When we talk on the next topic of bhakti yoga, certainly this point should be addressed. It's a very important point. People have a notion that Equipoise means one should be like a stone with no emotions. Absolutely no emotions. Many people have this wrong notion in India. That is why sometimes when they find a Hare Krishna devotee is becoming upset or angry about something, they get bewildered. Like one lady wrote to Prabhupada, Swamiji, you are young men. They came to distribute books and they got angry. And what kind of behavior is this? So she wrote a letter to Prabhupada. Of course, Prabhupada replied back to her saying that, thank you for the suggestion, but let me tell you, these men are totally dedicated. Prabhupada defended the devotees and wrote back. So Vaishnava philosophy doesn't advocate that one should be emotionless. For example, they talk about the Goswamis, the last stanza of that song, Shad Goswami Ashtakam. There is a paragraph which says, He Radhe He Vrijate Devi Ke Chalalite Nanda Shuno Kutaha Govarna Kalpapada Patale Kalindi Vane Kutaha. And then Koshantavi Sarvato Vajapure Kedair Mahavihvalav. Mahavihvalav means they were crying very loudly, calling out, Hey Radharani, where are you? Hey Krishna, where are you? Are you in the foot of Govardhan? Where are you? So, this kind of expressing the emotion for the Lord loudly, feeling separation, is very common for the devotees. Especially exalted devotees. These are not ordinary devotees. They are expressing their emotion. They are not like a stone. Similarly, when a Vaishnava passes away, suddenly other Vaishnavas, they cry. They suddenly weep that they have lost association of a devotee. And they also rejoice that the Vaishnava has ascended to the spiritual world. So they have emotion, surely. Like when Haridas Thakur passed away, or when Bhishma passed away. In all such occasions, we find the Vaishnavas expressing their emotions, of feeling of joy, feeling of sorrow. So Vaishnava lifestyle, Vaishnava philosophy teaches that the soul is the soul by nature has spiritual emotions. It has emotions. So we certainly feel happiness or distress on a spiritual platform. But on a material platform, a devotee knows very well that happiness and distress is simply a sense perception. It is superficial. What comes on a material plane? For example, for a material loss or a material gain, a devotee will not weep or jump like a monkey. But on a spiritual platform, a devotee has emotion. That's to be understood. So, there are many material losses for which Srila Prabhupada never lamented. In many, many occasions, Prabhupada proved his transcendental maturity in so many situations. But when it came to the spiritual platform, when it came to the level of devotees, then Prabhupada exhibited emotions. It's a very great expertise how a devotee can only act on a spiritual platform and not respond on a material platform. So devotee is materially inert, spiritually alert. Then he can respond in that way. Nityam cha samachittattvam ishtanishtopapattishu. A practical example is of Jadabharata. Jadabharata was a paramahamsa within. And externally, he was like a dirty brahmana. His body was not clean. His sacred thread was blackish. He didn't look like as if he had taken bath. And his father was a Vedic brahmana. He wanted to make him into a great brahman. He did lot of effort to bring Jadabharata to proper track. Like, he wanted Jadabharata to become such a high-class brahman, chanting all the Vedic mantras, doing karmakanda pujas, all the necessary things. But Jadabharata deliberately looked very ugly. Like sometimes the fire is covered in a pot. It's hidden. Or sometimes the gold is in a filth. The glory of it is unknown. Like that, Jadabharata was hidden. So Jadabharata was equipoised in all situations. His brothers, for example, after his father passed away, his brothers would give him some rice particles which were at the bottom of the vessel, the burnt one. They would give him that to eat. And Jadabharata would happily eat it. He would never mind. And his brothers took away all the possessions, all the property. And instead of sharing the property with him, what they did? They simply made him to stand in the place of a scarecrow. No, you know the scarecrow, they call it? They put a toy kind of thing. So they made him stand like that, just to watch the seals. But he never lamented that, you know, I have been rejected from the family member. His only goal was, I should not become deprived of my Krishna consciousness at any cost. I have lost twice. The third time, I am not going to miss. He was very conscious. That was his goal. That's why I was telling in the beginning that a devotee is spiritually alert, materially inert. So he was spiritually alert within, remembering what is his goal of life. But materially he didn't bother what did the circumstances bring him in his life. Like he was taken to goddess Kali, his neck was about to be cut off by the rogues and thieves. He was such a Mahabhagavata devotee that he didn't protest. This is the height of example we are talking in this connection. So anybody would protest, any living being would protest. Unless one is Paramahamsa, one cannot avoid protesting. So we can see in our practical life, when we are put in situations, immediately our likes and dislikes come into picture. Most of the things that we speak on an everyday basis are based on our likes and dislikes. Like we find that sometimes, you know, there is no sabji available, only rice and dal. We say, only rice dal today? We ask like that, isn't it? Immediately, it's very difficult to shut your mouth, isn't it? Because we have expectation, some things around us. We have expectation that it should be like this. Sometimes what happens, the more and more you get facility to enjoy, then our expectation level also keeps increasing more and more. It goes higher and higher. For example, if you eat sweet every day, one day there is no sweet, then you will feel as if, you know, it's no food at all. So our expectation level also increases. Not only with the things, with the people also, we have very, very great expectations from the situations that are brought about by people. Many people actually bring us enormous suffering. We are talking about the suffering and the happiness here, coming, how one should be equipoised. When can we be equipoised? Unless we have a proper outlook, we cannot be equipoised. And that outlook should be backed by bhakti. Without that, the outlook is like a branch of a tree cut off from the tree. It cannot be green and fresh. So, the outlook is this. I was speaking about this some classes ago. How, like there is a bubbling teenager. The grandfather expects that he should sit and listen attentively. Many grandfathers have this expectation. So before you all become grandfathers, know for sure that your grandson is not going to hear you. Similarly, a nagging wife, husband gets fed up with her and always thinks, when will my nagging wife, you know, become submissive and mild and polite to me and always offer obeisances to me and be respectful to me? The husband always anticipates till the last breath. And he miserably fails most often, unable to change his wife. Similarly, practically in most of the homes, we can't say in every home, majority of the homes, the daughter-in-law always keeps talking to her friends, when will my mother-in-law become like my mother? When will the time come? See, aspirations are never condemned in the scriptures, but they should be meaningful aspirations. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also asking kada. In which verse is asking kada? When will the time come? Tavanama grihane bhavishyati. Isn't it? Yugayitam nimeshena chakshisha pravrishayitam shunyayitam jagat sarvam govinda grihane. It's not coming there. One more verse. I think. No, not that verse. One more. Anybody knows that verse? Kada. The word kada comes in there. Pulakaya nijitam vapuh kada tavanama grihane bhavishyati. When will the time come when there will be tears in my eyes, I will stand on and he is asking. That kada, that when will the time come, that is a very meaningful ashabandha, aspiration. But the previous aspiration I told, that's a meaningless aspiration. Why? The spiritual aspirations are very much appreciated. It's called as lalasamayi prarthana. So we should actually appreciate the lalasamayi prarthanas and try to have lalasas in our life. Like we pray to Tulsi Maharani every day, please make me your servant, or make me some servant of a gopi, Vrindavan, so that I will be able to serve the divine couple Radha and Krishna. It's a very meaningful aspiration.
But the other aspirations, like the one I told you of a grandfather or a daughter-in-law or a husband, these kind of aspirations are meaningless aspirations, because we have to know that people are what they are. They cannot be changed. It is a sabhav. Sabhav means nature. It's the nature. Basically, we are telling, why should they not change their nature? Which is a very difficult thing to do. For people to change their nature in totality is very difficult. And also, the natures are born along with their birth. It's actually basically conditioning. Rajagun, tamagun, sattagun. And if a change has to be brought about in that, only a Vaishnava can bring about the change. Otherwise, swabhavas cannot be changed so much. So, one should learn to understand that whatever situation one is put in, that's an arrangement of the Lord for our purification. Which means if one gets a nagging wife or one gets a insubmissive grandson or one gets a belligerent or quarrelsome mother-in-law, one should understand that all these things are arrangements of Krishna for my purification. One should understand. Or there can be many situations. Chandra husbands are very good. They can be troublesome also. So, any person around us can be troublesome. And the troublesome people are actually there to help us grow very fastly. They are like a catalyst in our Krishna consciousness. How many of you have people who can tell you your faults or who can create some problems for you? Any of you are here? You have some people who create problems for you, or you don't have? Isn't it? So all the problem creators are our friends. Because the problem creators can help us get purified faster. So this is the outlook. With that outlook, as Prabhupada says, that outlook will be meaningful only when there is bhakti. Actually, Prabhupada Maharaj is saying in one verse, Tadvirya Gayana Mahamrita Magna Chitta. My dear Krishna, because I am absorbed in singing my transcendental glories, the pangs of the material life are not perceived by me. I don't feel them at all. Even the insults, they don't have effect on the mind. In such a mind which is filled with the Lord's glories or Lord's remembrance, Lord's glorification, such is the power of this potency of the bhakti yoga. Like, you know, the insult of stepmother on Dhruva Maharaj's mind, it was completely dissolved. Then he became overwhelmed with bhakti. When he returned home, you can see when he was offering obeisance to his stepmother, completely forgetting all the revengeful attitudes and the pains that he felt before. That's what Prabhupada is saying here, in the second part here. Generally, when we get something deserved, we are happy, and when we get something undeserved, we are distressed. But if you are actually in a spiritual position, these things will not agitate us. To reach that stage, we have to practice unbreakable devotional service. Devotional service to Krishna without deviation means engaging oneself in the nine pastures. Yeah. Here Krishna says, Mayicha Ananya Yogena Bhakti Avyabhicharani. This is a very important part of this. 20 processes of knowledge. Mayicha Ananya Yogena. Ananya Yogena means without diverting one's attention to anybody else. One should worship only me, Krishna says. Maam ekam sharanam braja. He says Bhagavad Gita also. Satatam kirtayanto maam. There also. Similarly, you find even not only Krishna is saying like this, even the devotees while preaching, they also use similar words. Like Prabhupada Maharaj says, Shravanam kirtanam Vishnoho. Smaranam parisivanam archanam mandanam dasyam sakyam atmani vedanam. Iti Pumsar Pita Vishnu Bhakti Chenava Lakshana. Two times he is saying. Which means Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Why he is putting a break there and saying Vishnu? Not Shravanam Kirtanam of Kali or Shravanam Kirtanam of some politician, Shravanam Kirtanam of some man-made God or God in a, some man who has been turned into God. There are so many human beings turned into gods, Kali Yuga. So that's why Prabhupada Maharaj is warning us, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. After saying all the Navavida Bhakti, then he is saying, Iti Pumsa, Pumsa means human being, Arpita. All these nine things offered by human being, again he is saying, to Vishnu. Iti Pumsa Arpita Vishnu Bhakti Sen Navalakshana. Two times he is stressing on the point, which goes to show Vishnu's unique position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna is saying, Santam Girtayan to Maam, Maam Ekam Sharanam Braja, you can see that, all these things. So, devotees have absolutely no ambiguity in surrendering, the path of surrender, whom to surrender. Sometimes in a railway station you find, you know, your ticket counter, they are giving tickets, there's a long queue. And suddenly another counter opens and people leave this queue and run to that booth. You have seen that, people do? And after 1 minute they close that and again they come back. See that. Similarly, the demigod worshippers also, they come to Krishna temple also. But they are restless because they want the results quickly. Yeah? As he says, Kshipram Yumanu Sheloke Siddhir Bhavati Karmaja. They want quick results. So they think, you know, while worshipping Krishna, let me try that also. Let me go to this counter also, that counter also, try this, try that. Try all possibilities, different possibilities. But Krishna Bhakti is not done like that. It is Maicha Ananya Yogena Bhaktiravya Vicharani. And Bhakti is not just some affirmation. It's a contract. Affirmation means, okay Krishna, I will do Bhakti for you. It's not that you can say, now I will do Bhakti and then you will do it after many, many years. Bhakti is something that you do right now. And it's a contract that you will never leave your feet, lot of feet. I will always do Bhakti for you. Not that you tell Krishna, Krishna, 2 years ago I chanted 2 rounds for you. Some people say like that, no? Yeah. I will come to your temple on Janmashtami day. So it is not like that. Bhakti is like a contract with the Lord that I will never leave your feet. Mama Janmani Janmani Ishvare Bhavata Bhaktir Ahaituki Kvai. That's the meaning of Bhakti. It is actually called as Akhanda Bhakti. Like they say Akhanda Naam, they say, no? Which means it's never broken. It's continuous. So the pure devotees do Bhakti continuously. 24 hours a day. And our Bhakti, like one devotee was telling Prabhupada, Prabhupada, although I have become a devotee, sometimes, I am very sorry to say Prabhupada, sometimes my mind goes to Maya. Prabhupada said, what do you mean? You are always in Maya. Sometimes you come to Krishna. Sometimes you think of Krishna, Prabhupada. So, that's the one major difference between a pure devotee and a neophyte devotee. Occasionally we think of Krishna. Rupa Goswami, out of his humility, in one of his prayers he says, my dear Lord, although you are the greatest and I am the smallest, although you are the most saintly, endowed with all divine qualities, and although I am the most sinful and wretched person, and although you are a genius and a kavi, most learned person, and although I am a fool, still you are very merciful upon this fallen soul and you are continuing to keep me at your lotus feet. Although I think of your form or I chant your names only occasionally, he says. So, we occasionally think of Krishna, still Krishna keeps us at his feet very mercifully. But actual meaning of bhakti means it's a 24 hours business. And such bhakti should again be ananya bhakti, which means the jnana element and karma element should be avoided, eliminated. What is the element of jnana? Jnana, karma, adi, anavritam. The element of jnana is that one speculates more and more about different things. And then one thinks with my IQ or with my intelligence, with my speculation, I will capture Krishna. So one thinks I can extend this intelligence that I have, the power of discrimination I have, up to the point of understanding God in totality. So one gets that false pride or false faith in oneself, false confidence. That is actually the jnana element, which makes the bhakti jnana mishra bhakti. Karma mishra bhakti means, one thinks by the potency of the punya that I have performed in so many lifetimes and in this lifetime and the kind of yajna, yad, all these things I have done, with that I will attain God. That is a kind of pride that comes from piety. It's called the pious materialist, we say. Like the yajnic brahmanas were like that. They were very proud of the yajna, that they could not see Krishna. Although Krishna was in the neighborhood. One Girdhar Swami was telling us about this pious materialist. He met a very wealthy gentleman So Maharaj was trying to preach to him something about Krishna. And that man said, Swamiji, what are you saying? I know everything about Krishna. We have Krishna at home, we have Bhagavad Gita at home. We are all traditionally Krishna bhaktas for several generations. He was very proud. He said, we are such ardent followers of Krishna, he said. Then somebody brought him a cup of coffee. And then he took a silver box out of his shirt. He opened it and said, you are such ardent followers of Krishna that even while drinking coffee, I don't take it without putting tulasi, he said. So putting tulasi in coffee and drinking it. Sometimes people who are very pious, they think they are right, but they are quite often wrong. That pride actually comes from the mundane piety. And they may be doing many things wrong. Yeah. Actually, before coming to ISKCON, I used to think I know a lot. Because of the Vedic chant that we used to do. But most often our Vedic chant was done without knowing much meaning. Just for the sake of nice melodious sound, we used to recite the Vedic mantras. So, this karma element is karma mishrit bhakti when we say one has faith in one's own potency of punya that one has performed. One thinks that with punya I can buy Krishna. One cannot buy Krishna with punya. One cannot buy Krishna with jnana. So jnana mishra, karma mishra, all these things are condemned. That's why Lord Krishna sends Uddhava to Vrindavan to learn the spontaneous love from the Braja gopis or Braja vasis of Vrindavan. Purposely Krishna sends him there. It's not that Uddhava was an ordinary devotee. Uddhava was a very, very great devotee. He was such a great devotee, Lord Krishna says in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, he says, my dear Uddhava, you are so dear to me. Not even Lakshmi or Brahma is dear to me as you. Such is the platform of Uddhava. And he was a student of Brihaspati. And Lord Krishna felt that although Uddhava was very learned in describing the absolute truth in a very scholarly way, the Lord wanted Uddhava to go to Vrindavan and learn the spontaneous bhakti. The spontaneous bhakti means people do not worship Krishna in Vrindavan because Krishna is God. People worship Krishna in Vrindavan because they love Him. That is spontaneous bhakti. So that is a very elevated platform. They love Krishna for Krishna's sake. Not that they want something from Krishna that Krishna possesses, because of which they love Him. Generally, the living entities worship any particular god or goddess for something that they possess. But you'll find in Vrindavan that's not the case. Vrindavan, all the Vrijavasis of Vrindavan, they have such natural love. We can tell an example. When I was in Bombay, one of the house programs, Maharaj was talking this past time. Very interesting. He was telling, once in Vrindavan there was a very serious meeting of Nanda, Upananda, Sunanda, and all of them had come for a meeting together. And there was a discussion about Krishna in that meeting, in absence of Krishna. Only Nanda Maharaj was present there. They all said, Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Baba, we have a very serious thing to talk to you. They said, your son Krishna is not an ordinary personality. He must be the Supreme God, or he must be some great demigod. And you are taking him very cheaply. So we want to tell you, how easily he is able to kill all these demons. Not one or two, so many of them. And that too as a small child. So this we want to bring it to your notice. So we have seen you treating him like an ordinary baby. So we better warn you. So Nanda heard it and said, what do you mean? He said, you are calling him God. What kind of God is this God? No, who cannot even tolerate the fear of the thunderbolt in the sky. When there is a thunderbolt in the sky, you know, Krishna dashes to Mother Yashoda and catches hold of her both her feet and submerges his face into her sari. Similarly, he said, he is a cheater. He is a liar. So many times he tells us lies. And he is a thief. He goes and steals butter from house to house, as if there is no butter at his own house. And he said, what kind of God are you talking about? And whether he is God or not, I don't care. But he is my son, so I have to correct him. It's my duty to correct him. So saying this, Nanda Baba laughed. And all of them, Upananda and Nanda Upananda, they all forgot actually. When they heard all these pastimes of Krishna, they completely forgot his actual position. as the God, the capital G-O-D, the Supreme God. In fact, when Krishna would kill the demons, he doesn't kill them at all. Krishna doesn't kill. Krishna has a Vasudeva expansion which kills the demons. Just like, for example, a king may have some constable or some, you know, some senapati or some soldiers, and he may just order them, go and find out what is the situation there, you know, and whatever punishments are to be given, give them there and come. So they will go there. If somebody has to be hung, they will be hung. Somebody has to be, you know, beaten up, they will beat them up. But the king is sitting in his own royal palace, peacefully eating and dining, without any worry. So the same is true for Krishna also. Krishna delights in the Vrindavan pastimes, but he does not take any trouble to kill any demon. First of all, he doesn't kill at all. His expansions kill the demons like that. So, in this way, Krishna keeps all the Vrijabhasis in Yogamaya potency, due to which he makes them forget that Krishna is God. See, in the material world also, the living entities forget that Krishna is God. They are an illusion. Whereas in the spiritual world, the living entities forget Krishna is God so that they can relish his association as a friend or as a son or as a lover. That's why Krishna has kept that. In fact, Krishna wears the ornament of Yogamaya on himself to such an extent that he himself delights in the pastimes that he performs. I got a beautiful verse from Bhagavatam. See, this is a verse in the 10th canto, 10:50:29. Sthityodbhavantam bhuvanatrayasya samihite nanta gunasvalilaya natasya chitram parapakshnigrahas tatapi martyan vidasya varnyate. It says here, for him who orchestrates the creation, maintenance and destruction of the three worlds and who possesses unlimited spiritual qualities, it is hardly amazing that he subdues an opposing party. Still, when the Lord does so, imitating human behavior, the sages glorify his acts. What is the meaning of this? Somebody may say, what is so great about God killing some demon? God is great, huh? So he can kill some demon. What is so great about that? Some agnostics may blame like that. They may say, hey, you people are talking about Krishna as God and then God killing so many demons and always emerging victorious. What is so great about it? But still here it is said, Krishna puts the devotees in Yogamaya and himself in Yogamaya in such a way that the devotees of the Lord always appreciate his activities as very glorious, because they derive great transcendental pleasure by situating themselves beyond the material realm. And they delight in hearing such pastimes. And they never say, because Krishna is God, he is doing that. You will find when Krishna was bound in the curls of Kaliya, do we not find that, how Yashoda is crying, how the covered boys are crying? They all are weeping, you know, they all want to enter into waters and save Krishna. It's a real, that's why it is said, Krishna consciousness is, when Krishna enacts pastime, it is said it is full of life, it's full of dynamism, it is fully vibrant. It is not like some hackneyed thing, boredom, and it is being performed again and again. The devotees always delight in Krishna's pastimes. In this purport, he writes a very beautiful sentence. The Lord plays the part of human being and expanding his pleasure potency. He creates thrilling transcendental pastimes full of suspense and dynamic action. By the Lord's Yogamaya potency, he appears exactly like a human being, and thus we may enjoy the spectacle of the Supreme Person acting on the earthly stage. Undoubtedly, stubborn agnostics will argue that since Krishna is God, there is no real suspense involved. But such skeptics simply do not understand Krishna's attractive potency. Beauty and drama, even on the material stage, possess their own fantastic, their own fascinating logic. And similarly, we love Krishna for his own sake. We appreciate his beauty for its own sake. And we enjoy Krishna's pastimes because they are in fact wonderful. In and of themselves, he says. So, this explains what is the meaning of appreciating Krishna for Krishna's sake, and not for anything else. So, the devotees of the Lord, they become a part of these pastimes when they hear these pastimes. And they dwell in them, and they delight in them, and they consider Krishna to be one amongst them, like a friend or the lover. As soon as any one of the Vrajavasis would see Krishna as God, finished, this bhavana is gone. Like Ashada is seeing sometimes Krishna as God and Krishna opens the mouth. You can see the whole transcendental pastimes is disturbed by that. You can see that. Arjuna is treating Krishna as the Vishwarupa Darshan God, the big God, finished. Immediately you find Arjuna, you know, with folded palms, you know, falling at the feet and respecting, which Krishna doesn't like. Krishna wants to maintain that rasa with them, exchange with them. So, the bhakti is spontaneous in the purest level, where a devotee does not see Krishna as God, but he sees Krishna as some very close associate. And Krishna wants that. In the spiritual world, Krishna likes to be someone's son, Krishna likes to be someone's lover, Krishna likes to be someone's friend. And that gives him more delight than being a God who controls and manages creation and things like that, which he doesn't do anyway himself. He hands it over to other people, all those things. He just wants to enjoy. So Krishna is a supreme enjoyer, as we have heard it several times. We as living entities also endeavor to become enjoyer. One devotee in Vrindavan was telling how Krishna is such a supreme enjoyer that he always wants to be as a central figure in Vrindavan, in all the devotees' lives. Like for example, take the pastime of Putana coming to, you know, kill Krishna. When Putana came to kill Krishna, at that time it is said, Krishna immediately closed his eyes. Although Putana came in a very beautiful form, looking like some goddess of fortune, he knew who she was. He closed his eyes. And after that, he has given many, many reasons why Putana, when she came, Krishna closed his eyes. One acharya says, Krishna knew that she is Bala Ghatini, killer of children. So Krishna did not want to have the sight of such a murderer. So he closed his eyes. Another acharya says, why Krishna closed the eyes? Because he thought that Putana was feeling that, you know, something inside her heart was telling her, no, don't do it, don't do it. The guilty feeling. And Krishna thought, if I also open my eyes, probably she will not kill me. Or she will not make the endeavor. So he closed his eyes to give her confidence. No problem, I am an ordinary child, you can go ahead. So giving a go ahead to her. Another acharya says, Krishna actually was thinking, now I am going to begin my pastimes of killing demons. And the first demon happens to be a woman. What a great sorrow it is. Generally, the Vedic times, the five weaklings are never to be killed. The brahmanas or the women or the children, old people. There is one saying Prabhupada makes in Bhagavatam. Sometimes the women are not even punished for the mistakes. They may be probably chastised, not punished. The children, the women, the old people, the brahmanas, the cows, they are always forgiven. So you will never hear that a great kshatriya comes in the front and says, I have killed 20 women courageously in the war. You will never hear that. So Krishna thought the very first demon that I have to kill happens to be a woman. So he felt very sorry. So he felt very bad about it. So he closed his eyes, one acharya says. Another acharya says, what is so great about it, Krishna's eyes closing? Now he is a baby, and generally whenever a baby is going to drink milk, before drinking milk the baby closes the eyes. Similarly, Krishna closed the eyes. In this way, the acharya has gone giving several explanations. Then one acharya was said, the reason why Krishna performed this pastime of closing the eyes. He says, Krishna closed eyes so that many, many future Vaishnavas can go on commenting on him and glorifying him. That is the main purpose for which he closed the eyes. Can you imagine just one small activity of closing the eyes? It is such an important activity. So many acharyas are commenting on it. You can see that. So Krishna wants to be the central figure amongst all his devotees, and he is the center of attraction. When you hear this statement, a bell rings in our head. Because we also have a desire to be the central figure of creation. Everyone. You can see that. So That desire is actually the cause of our forgetfulness of Krishna. So if we have to again lose the forgetfulness and again regain our bhakti for Krishna, what should be done? One has to become a cooperator in Krishna Leela. One has to become an assistant in enhancing the Lord's mood in his pastimes. So one should, the devotees who have transcended the platform of envy, and they delight in these pastimes when Krishna is glorified over and over again. And when we are afflicted by envy, then we want to be the central figure of creation. So these principles are very important to be understood when we talk about bhakti. Bhakti means non-envious. As it is said, nirmatsaranam satam. In Bhagavatam, the word is said, nirmatsaranam. Akshana says, idam tute guhitamam pravakshyami anasuryave, he says. So, bhakti has to be performed without karma mix or jnana mix, or one should not have envy for the Lord. One should perform it with great delight and perform it for bhakti's sake, for Krishna's sake, not for any motive from the Lord. And it should be continuous, akhanda. It should not have any break. And it should be performed with great devotion. So he says, Mayecha Ananya Yogena Bhakti Rabhya Vicharani. Now, there is one class of impersonalists who, there are three types of impersonalists. One class of impersonalists say, Brahman Satyam, Jagat Nitya. Simply meditate on Brahman. So they go and meditate on Brahman. There are others who also accept that Brahman is supreme, ultimately. But you can adopt some process in between as a standby process for the time being. Until we achieve that Brahman stage. And once you achieve the Brahman stage, you can live it after that, like a ladder. That's one category. So they say, this bhakti is some sort of illusion, they say. They say you can assume some kind of form of God that you can accept according to your desire. Ishta Devata, you accept. Accept Kali Mata, or you accept Ganesha, or you accept Krishna, or Vishnu, or anybody you want. And you do bhakti for them. And you develop devotion to them. And what is the advantage of this, developing this bhakti for a particular deity? That bhakti can keep you oblivious to the material pushings and pullings. And the bhakti can keep you, you know, aloof from the onslaughts of the material nature. And keeping yourself aloof, you can do bhakti for them. And then you post yourself at a point beyond return. And once you put yourself at a point beyond return, then you can give up all this murti puja, mantra, upasana, yajna, kriya, all this mudra, all these things you can give it up. And then you can avoid, you know, you become practically free from all upadis, and you can merge into Brahman. This is one class of impersonalists who say. So we should not get cheated by those who perform apparent bhakti. It looks like bhakti, which is not bhakti. It's only bhakti abhas. Looks like bhakti, but it is a cheating bhakti. That's why Prabhupada also says Putana is like a fake guru. Putana is compared to a fake guru also. Like she comes to feed milk and kill the child, kill Krishna. Similarly, there are many gurus who appear to be like giving bhakti. We may think, oh, this milk is so nourishing. So you go to get bhakti there, and then they will feed you something that looks like bhakti. And finally, they will say the conclusion is that you have to merge into Brahman and become God. That is the poison which they feed you and they kill you. And they kill Krishna in your heart. So, Aveshna Mukodgirna Putam Harikatamritam Shonam Naivakartavyam Sarpa Uchishta Yatapaya. It's like a milk touched by a serpent. It's very dangerous. Such people. Now when we talk of illusion, Mayavadi say Brahmam Satyam Jagat Nitya. It's very important to understand what is illusion. And it is also important to know what is the mistake that Mayavadis are committing in understanding illusion. Unless we understand their mistake, we cannot reject their philosophy with in a wholehearted way. For example, say if a magician is taking out his cap and releasing a rabbit from the cap, is it not a miraculous thing? What is so special in that? Imagine if a rabbit is coming running from the doorstep inside the room, Is there anything special? Nothing special. But what is special is that he is releasing a rabbit out of his cap. So, the rabbit is not illusion. The cap is not illusion. The magician is not illusion. The illusion is created in your eyes to think that the rabbit is coming from the cap, which is not true. He has got a rabbit from somewhere, but he knows how to, you know, do some maya jal in such a way that he can cheat your eyes and bring the rabbit out of that. Isn't it? So, in the same manner, when you talk of illusion, the world is not illusion. The world is existing before us. The Atma is not illusion. The Jiva is existing. The illusion is to think that this world is a place where I can permanently stay. That is illusion. Think this world to be my eternal place. And I can go on in this world. And this is my abode, my own planet. Like they write in one computer center, no? My planet. So to think like that, huh? That is illusion. That's illusion. Like once Prabhupada was in one of the car parking places where Shyam Sundar Prabhu had parked the white ambassador car. So while they were returning, he sat in the car and he started the car. It wasn't starting at all. It was giving some problem. So Prabhupada was patiently waiting. What happened? He was asking. So one gentleman came and said, so where do you want to go? It was his car. Shyam Sundar Prabhu was wondering, who are you? Then that man said, it's my car. So what do you do? I want to do with my car? Then he saw the Swamiji inside and said, oh Swamiji, you want to go somewhere? He said, I can drop you if you want. Then Shyam Sundar Prabhu understood, our car is, you know, parked on the other side. And this is somebody else's car. So then of course, that man was volunteering to drop and all. And later Prabhupada was telling Shyam Sundar Prabhu, just see, if it was America, they would have shot us. Because in India, the culture is there. Huh? You know, this man was so kind. Now, if you see this past time, here, what was the problem here? Was car illusion? Car is not illusion. Shyam Sundar Prabhu, Prabhupada, they were also present. They were not illusion. The perception was illusion. Because the car looked white, that car was also white, and they thought it's the same car. Both were ambassadors. Looking like that. The perception is illusion. So, when the Jiva thinks, I am God, that perception is illusion. Mayavadi thinks the Jiva has no identity. Jiva and Brahman, everything is same. That's why it said, Yaya sammohito Jiva, Atmanam, Triguna Atmakam. When we come under the three gunas, we go into this illusion. So, Bhagavatam says that when we get out of this illusion that I am the enjoyer, paro api manute anartham, to think I am this body, that is illusion. To think I am the Ishwar or God, that is illusion. So that illusion has to be given up. Not that bhakti is an illusion. In fact, the bhakti, Bhagavan and Bhakta, these three are eternal. Bhagavan, the Lord, bhakti is the devotional service, and Bhakta is the devotee. These three are eternal. And they are so eternal that a devotee, even while living in this world, can experience the spiritual world. They are so eternal. So we can get into the time of, into the zone of timelessness, even while being in this world. Simply by entering into the pastimes of the Lord, by meditating upon them, by chanting the Lord's glories, one can go to a timeless state where one will become free from fear, free from illusion, free from shoka, moha, bhaya and all those things. If the Lord or the process of devotion service can liberate a conditioned soul from this world, how can that process be illusory? You can imagine, by carrying the Lord in our heart, so one can be liberated from this world. How can such a Lord come under illusion, or how such a Lord can have a body made up of Maya? You can ask. This question is asked in Bhagavatam. If somebody can keep the Lord in the heart and become liberated and go to spiritual world, how can such a Lord himself be bound? It's a foolish idea. So when we do bhakti, we should save ourselves from this dangerous mayavad or the impersonalism that looks, that deceives the living entities, that looks like bhakti. One should escape. And lastly, one more thing that looks like bhakti also we should talk is show bottle devotion. It's also very important. Show bottle devotion is the sahajayism. Sahajayism, once when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, one lady, she fell unconscious. Prabhupada told some devotees, remove this, that he said. Prabhupada didn't pay any attention. So Prabhupada never appreciated somebody exhibiting devotion in the public, falling unconscious, bursting into tears, showing show bottle devotion. Prasanna Saraswati says, there was a lady who was pregnant in the hospital who was screaming and wailing and yelling because it was a delivery time for her. And then after all that happened, there was silence. And then there was a baby by her side. She had delivered a baby. Now there was another woman who was a barren woman, who thought that all you need to do is go to hospital, lie down in a bed and you scream and you get a child. So she also went to hospital and she was screaming and yelling and shouting loudly, nothing happened to her. Similarly, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says that, the symptoms of bhakti are very easy to imitate. Like a bhakta is bursting out into tears, his hair is standing on end, his body is quivering. These symptoms are very easy even by a cinema actor to imitate. Like this Arun Govil was acting as Lord Ramachandra, isn't it? In the TV movie. When he would come in the city outside, people would offer him obeisances on the road. Indians are so naive, Many of the Indians, they are so superstitious and naive that when they would see him, they'd fall on the ground, prostrated obeisances. They were calling him and Sita also, Sita and Ram, they would worship like anything. So this fellow was so restless, he was acting in the movie. In between, when he would get some time, he would come out and smoke a cigarette. Yeah, in the movie also. You can imagine. The movie is Ram, outside he is smoking a cigarette, you can see that. So, this is simply a show bottle. In the same manner, some people, they are attracted to show bottle devotion. There are some cheater gurus who show bottle devotion, and there are some cheated who follow them. And then they also get cheated. They don't get bhakti. We are also fortunate to be under the custody of Prabhupada's Sambandha Jnan, which Prabhupada has given in Parampara. We are so safely protected. Because especially this show bottle devotion is very fascinating. How many of you are fascinated by show bottle devotion before? I was one who was very fascinated. You are all not fascinated? Half only, is it? Others seem to be very logical minded. Is it? Okay. I was very attracted to devotion. I thought that, actually, we used to sing songs, about Krishna. So we used to get tears in the eyes. And we used to sing songs about the desh also, about our country, Indian country. For that also you'll get tears in the eyes. What does that mean? Isn't it? And then you're seeing some halwa, isn't it? And there is saliva in the tongue. So somebody is coming to a temple and they're crying, and you see he's crying. But he's praying to God, "Oh my dear God, my daughter is still not married, My son, please, he has failed, four papers in 10th standard, please give him a good future," and he's crying. People cry for different reasons. Why a person cries, we don't know. So many of us, we are emotional by nature. I don't know how many of us are emotional. If you're emotional by nature, even while doing little bhakti, sometimes you will feel tears and all. Never get cheated with the idea that you have become a pure devotee. Never commit that mistake. It's very dangerous to commit that mistake. Because why? If you think you are a pure devotee, you will never endeavor to advance after that. You will think that now I have at last reached. I will think like that. But you can know that although tears are coming in your eyes, sometimes when you hear some Hare Krishna or you read something or hear something, you will also see that for sense gratification also, we are equally emotional. Our emotions very easily attract us to sense gratification. So this is a proof that we are not pure devotees. So the desire for sense gratification should be practically nil when a person becomes a pure devotee. Then we can know that it's pure devotion. That's the main, one of the main symptoms. Bhakti, what is it was? Bhakti pareshanubhavo virakti anyatra chaishatrika ekakalaha. Virakti should come also. Vishaya chadya kabe shuddha habe man. See, they always say these things together. On one hand you give up Vishaya chadya and then shuddha habe man. Then only you can get bhakti. So, sometimes we might have been cheated that we have achieved great devotion. It's a fool's gold, as we say. Fool's gold means it's like a roll gold. It's not real. It's not 24 carat gold. On the other hand, we find Srila Prabhupada twice in his earthly pastimes. Prabhupada could not control the ecstatic love. Once when he was singing in Gorakhpur, I think, is it? When he was playing kartals, he was singing Jairada Madhava. So singing, the kartal flew off from his hands. It rolled on the ground and made a sound, and there was pin drop silence. And tears were springing from his eyes, like arrows coming out of the eyes. And Prabhupada's throat was choked and he could not speak a word. He closed his eyes and went into trance. Another time Prabhupada was speaking about the glories of Shishi Gaur Nithai. Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya is very, very merciful. And Nityananda is even more merciful. That's all he spoke. And saying this, his throat got choked completely, remembering the mercy of Gaur Nithai. And then he couldn't speak anything. So in such an occasion, the devotees didn't know what to do. They were standing, they were all watching Prabhupada. And then after some time, when Sannyasi was there, he said to all the devotees, let's chant Hare Krishna. They all sang Hare Krishna. After some time, Prabhupada came back to external consciousness. And then devotees approached Prabhupada and asked later to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, in such occasions when we see you absorbed in ecstatic love, what should we do? Should we pray to you, or should we worship you? Should we glorify it? Or should we chant Hare Krishna? Prabhupada said, I am very sorry. Such things don't happen to me often. And Prabhupada was worried that my devotees, my disciples and my followers should not imitate this. He was very, very worried. He never made a big issue out of it. He just suppressed it. So a devotee never wants to exhibit ecstasy of bhakti in the public, exactly as a chaste wife will not expose her body in the public, in front of other men. So a wife who is chaste is known only to the husband, not any other man. Similarly, a devotee expresses ecstasy only to Krishna, not anyone else. Actually, you can compare a wife to a Vaishnava in so many respects. A wife wears a kumkum, a devotee wears tilak. A wife wears, what do you call that? Mangalsutra, he wears, devotee wears kantimala, loyal to Krishna. Isn't it? You can compare in so many respects. A wife is chaste to the husband. Similarly, a devotee is chaste. Devotee's tongue is chaste towards Krishna, only glorifies Krishna. Devotee's eyes are chaste, only sees beauty of Krishna. Ears are chaste, only hears about Krishna. Tongue is chaste, eats only prasad, nothing else. His hands and legs and all the limbs of his body and mind are also chaste, engaged only in Krishna's service. So a devotee can be chaste like that. And such a chaste devotee will never want to exhibit ecstasy for others. Actually, Bhaktan Sarpi says in one prayer, any person who exhibits his ecstasy for name and fame is like a flagrant prostitute who wears different colored dresses and stands in the marketplace to attract men. These are the words of Bhaktan Saraswati. Anybody who wants to show their devotion to others, they are like a flagrant prostitute who dresses in different colors, stands in the marketplace showing her body to others. He says, so it's a thorough warning for us not to exhibit our bhakti. There was one Dwaraka, who was a driver of Krishna's chariot. Once he felt a great ecstasy while serving Krishna. So tears were coming, torrents of tears in his eyes, and he could not see Krishna properly. So when he was signing Krishna, he was telling Krishna, enough of this ecstasy, allow me to serve you. Now that I got opportunity to serve you, let me serve you. Why this ecstasy is coming in my way in serving you? So devotees curse ecstasy if the ecstasy comes in the way of serving Krishna. If the ecstasy doesn't stop a devotee serving Krishna, then devotees don't mind, because it's Krishna's reciprocation. But Krishna is so much pleased with the devotee that Krishna supplies abundant ecstasy to the devotee. Even if the devotee doesn't demand it, Krishna supplies to the devotee. So, one aspect of bhakti is to understand that one should not be swayed by sahajayism. The many things we saw today, we saw to go from the backwards, if you go, we talked about sahajayism, we talked about Mayavad. Mayavad is doing bhakti, bhakti abhas, show bottle bhakti. Then before that we saw karma mishra, jnana mishra, how those things are not bhakti. And worshipping Krishna without any motivation. And loving Krishna for Krishna's sake. And we talked about the spontaneous bhakti, where the devotee has no expectation. And the topmost platform of bhakti, if one wants to understand, is that a devotee doesn't want to serve Krishna, he wants to serve Krishna's devotee. Because Krishna loves those who serve his devotees. Just like, for example, if any of you are wearing a new watch, somebody tells you, Prabhu, Chandra Prabhu, you are wearing a beautiful watch, isn't it? If somebody tells you, immediately what will you find? There will be a smile on his face, isn't it? Or they say, Chandra Prabhu, your shirt is very wonderful. You know, if you tell someone like that, you are not even appreciating them. You are appreciating their tadiya, or something what they are wearing, their hand or the shirt that they are wearing. But why do they have a smile? Sometimes they even mean that you are not so beautiful, but the shirt makes you beautiful. Isn't it? Somebody may be not so beautiful, but when they wear a very attractive, costly shirt, like nowadays, everyone wears safari nowadays. Yeah, even you find everywhere, isn't it? Isn't it? You may say, because you are wearing safari, you look beautiful. Isn't it? Still that person doesn't mind. Anyway, you are accepting that I am beautiful. This safari. Isn't it? So, Krishna doesn't mind what you tell about him, but he is very pleased when you glorify his devotee. Krishna is very pleased. That is why it is said, one begins his spiritual path by approaching Krishna, there is not much assurance that you may get Krishna. But if you begin your spiritual path by approaching a devotee, you can be 100% sure that you will get Krishna. You can be very, very sure. That's why there is one Raghunath Das Goswami's wonderful prayer, in which he says, if Krishna calls me, come here, and if he is standing alone, I will run away. I will not go to him. But if Radharani is standing there, even if she doesn't call me, I will run to that place, because she will hand me over to Krishna. He says, that's a wonderful prayer, no? So Krishna is standing and is calling, I won't go, he is saying. Because you know, Krishna is always a dangerous person. Sometimes you know nobody can understand his words. It's mysterious. He says, Kaunteya Pratijanehi, Ame Bhakta Prana. He is telling Arjuna, you go and tell. Sometimes I tell lies also. He is so cunning and intelligent. So it's better not to approach Krishna directly. And Krishna himself has said in one verse, he says, those who claim to be my devotees are not my devotees. Those who are devotees of my devotees are my devotees. So Krishna may call, come here, and if you go there, he will say no. If Bhagavan says no, who are you? He will ask. Somebody may say, I am Krishna devotee, I have no time for you. Who are you? I am servant of devotees. Come here, I have all my time for you. Similarly, when Krishna is calling, you know, you may be rejected also. But if Radharani is standing, he says, I will immediately run to that place. Because Radharani, the divine mother, she will hand me over to Krishna. So that is this is the ultimate principle of Bhakti Yoga, where a devotee understands that by becoming servant of Krishna's devotees, I can please Krishna far more than endeavoring to please him directly. The Kanishtha Adhikari tries to please Krishna directly. He goes to temple, he offers flowers to Krishna, he speaks to Krishna, bows down to Krishna, cries to Krishna and goes away. You know, he will never, you know, there will be Bhagavatam class going on, one word will not enter his ears. Isn't it? But a Madhyamadhikari is one who understands the glory of a devotee. How a devotee is different from the dveshi. How a devotee is different from the other people. He knows the difference. And so one has to come to the point of Madhyamadhikari and learn to appreciate the devotees. Sometimes one may think, because I am worshipping Krishna and I am adoring Krishna, especially in neophyte stage also we get tears, as I was telling you. So that is Kanishtha tears. So that means we have to go to Madhyamadhikari stage, where you will be able to respect devotees even more than Krishna. Respecting Krishna. Because Krishna himself worships his devotees, like Sudama, washing his feet, offering puja for him, offering. There is one nice verse in Bhagavatam which says, when the devotees are walking, you know, Krishna is walking, running behind them. Why is he running behind them? Because he wants to pick up the dust of those devotees. He said. There is one prayer, I think it comes in Prithu section, I think, one prayer, where it says that the Supreme Lord has become famous by always taking the dust of his devotees. Like that there is a prayer in Bhagavatam. You wonder what is so special about the dust of the devotees. So and how did that make the Lord famous? These are all very esoteric verses. But we can understand that these verses glorify the greatness of Krishna's devotees, whose heart is completely amalam. completely free from any kind of mull of karma, jnana, yoga, or bhog. All kinds of things are not there in the heart. The heart is a very suitable place for Lord Govinda Krishna to come and reside. So in this way, mai chananya yogena bhakti abhyabhicharani. This is abhyabhicharani bhakti. Krishna says here that is actually the cream of this entire 13.8-12. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Bhaktavinda ki.